Barbara, can you unmute yourself?
Good morning and welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. My name is Barbara Chatterton. My pronouns are she and her. And I started coming to Prairie about 1998. Currently, I am the chair of the Hospitality Committee and the Caring Committee. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We strive to be welcoming to all, although we recognize that we all have our biases that limit our understanding of how others may perceive us. We stumble in our efforts, but we commit to keep trying to grow our ability to love people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender identity, family structure, age, or abilities. We'd like to invite you to add your pronouns to your name in Zoom. Introducing yourself with pronouns is a great way to challenge the norm that these should be assumed and to create space for everyone, no matter how they identify. Click on your picture, press the three dots in the upper right, and click on rename to add your pronouns. We have a few announcements. Just see the order of service available via a link on your weekly newsletter for additional events. This month, we are sharing our offering this whole quarter with the Tenant Resource Center, which is dedicated to promoting positive relations between rental housing consumers, tenants, and providers, landlords, by providing information and referrals, education and rental rights and responsibilities, and access to conflict resolution. The opening music today is This Is My Song, Finlandia. Words by Lloyd Stone, performed by Rachel Long, Lynn Curry, and Dan Proud.
This is my song, O God of all the nations, a song of peace for lands afar and nigh. This is my home, the country where my heart is. Here are my hopes, my dreams, my holy shrine. But other hearts in other lands are beating with hopes and dreams. Skies are bluer than the ocean, and sunlight beams on clover leaf and pine. But other lands have sunlight too and clover, and skies are
very much. That was beautiful.
This is a chalice lighting for a service on the separation of church and state by Tracy Bleakney. This chalice burns with two purposes. The first burns for those who seek and defend the right to a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, so that each person may live according to conscience in a democratically elected society. The second burns for the defenders of freedom, working against those who would impose their own religious beliefs on others through intimidation or legislation. May we tend this flame always, ever vigilant and courageous in the struggle for freedom and justice for all. We light this chalice as a symbol of our gathered community and the divine spark in each of us. We will now have a moment of silent meditation. Our reading is a selection from A Faith for the Free by James Luther Adams. There can be no reliable faith for the free unless there are faithful men and women who firm the faith into beliefs, who test and criticize the beliefs, who then transform and transmit the beliefs. This process of faith forming and transforming the beliefs of the free faith is a process of discussion. It is a cooperative endeavor in which people surrender to the commanding, transforming reality. The only way men and women can reliably form and transform belief is through the sharing of tradition and new insights, and through the cooperative criticism and testing of tradition and insight. In other words, people must sincerely work with each other in order to give reliable form and expression to faith. This is the only way freedom from tyranny can be fulfilled in freedom with justice and truth.
Today's service is E. Corvus Unum by Reverend Matt Aspen.
Today's presentation relates to our second principle, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations.
Thank you, Barbara and Ron, and good morning, everyone. It's always so good to be with you each week. You may be wondering why I'm coming to you from space this morning. Well, I've been wondering if anybody's been seeing the same social media algorithms as I do and has been hearing a lot about the James Webb telescope that was launched back in December. Has anybody been seeing this? Yep, a couple of people, okay. I remember when it launched, and there was a lot of news about it, and they said it had been the result of international cooperation that was decades in the making and had billions of dollars invested into its development. And it was going to require a great deal of precise alignment once it had been launched into the direct gravitational pull of the sun. Actually, let me even have a, here we can even give you a little visual of it. This is what we're talking about here. These are the mirrors on it. It contains 18 large mirrors powered by 132 separate motors that need to integrate seamlessly together to try to help it develop clear images. It seemed like there were 1,000 tiny needle eyes, all of which needed to be threaded perfectly if this mission was to succeed to its highest potential, which was nothing less than to give humanity a clearer glimpse into the origins of the universe than had ever been available before. This telescope should give us the opportunity to glimpse into the moment of our collective birth and move us one step closer to clear answers to one of the most pressing theological questions humanity has ever faced. How did all of this something come from nothing? I remember it taking over a month from its launch till news began surfacing that the James Webb Telescope had successfully reached its orbital plane around the sun. We launched it into space and it had to catch the gravity of the sun. And I remember thinking to myself, well, that took a long time. It seems like a while since that thing launched. And the weeks since it reached its orbit have been a steady stream of updates regarding the myriad of major and minor tweaks that it has taken to position its heat shields and its mirrors correctly. And then when the first images came through, it looked like a picture I could have taken with the zoom lens on my phone. There was a smattering of white dots. They were kind of smeared. But this was apparently the first step in the alignment, and it was completely to be expected. New images have since come in, and you can begin to see all of these lenses coming into an aligned focus. And assuming all continues to go as planned, we will soon be treated to clear images made by the light that has been traveling through the universe for over 13 billion years. How miraculous that will actually be. Now, I share this story because it feels like it perfectly illustrates my time at Prairie here so far. This place, this community, is the result of a long collaboration between a myriad of actors, some of whom who've been working together over decades towards the shared dream of a brighter tomorrow. And I feel like I was brought into this project at this point in time to help with a big launch. You've held a vision for some time that while you'd like to keep your feet on the ground and never leave behind what makes this place special, you'd also like to see the good news of this place shared more widely and for the benefit of more people. And instead of peering into the past, you peer into the future and strain to see the possibilities of a brighter tomorrow. I've spent the past few months getting a better sense of the instruction manuals and the unique characteristics of the hundreds of different individual mirrors that perform their own function within this system. But I recognize that to truly peer into the future, to create something great together, we will all need to be as fully aligned as possible. If we all end up pointing our mirrors in our own directions, all we will individually see is a myopic blur. Now, if most, but not all of us, can get pointed in a more unified direction, we may still see clearly ahead, but we may be a bit disappointed with the results. We'll realize that there's things missing. But if we can all get aligned around a unified, deeper purpose and point our collective energies together, there's no limit to what I believe Prairie might be able to achieve. E pluribus unum, out of many, one. The unofficial model of the early United States was approved by Congress as part of an official seal in 1782. E pluribus unum remained the unofficial model of the United States until it was replaced officially in 1956 by an act of Congress to In God We Trust. I step backwards, I think, in the use of democratic language, if ever there was one. But perhaps we would collectively be better served if we were to consider going back to that earlier motto. Interestingly enough, if you look at pretty much every religious tradition, this reminder that we are all a part of a larger one tends to be pretty foundational. In Unitarian Universalism, this concept is covered in our seventh principle, the reminder that we are all a part of the same interdependent web, and that what harms one strand of the web weakens the structure for all of us. It's sometimes hard to look at the news today and recall back this nation ever being united. The divisions that have been sown over the past decades have become dangerously oppositional and entrenched. How did we get here? And what lesson does our history offer that can help guide us toward a brighter collective tomorrow? We've known about the dynamics that lead to the type of divisions we see in the world today since at least 1954. Our own Mary Franz shared with me an article recently published in the New Yorker titled Poles Apart that highlights a social experiment that was created back then in the shadow of two world wars that demonstrated just how natural competition was in the human animal. And sadly, how the simple demarcation of a line between us and them could so quickly cause two groups made up of formerly homogeneous individuals begin to identify with their own tribe and to demonize the other. Can you guess what the only influence these researchers found was available to bring these artificially separated groups back together? It turned out it was the existence of and collective work towards the remedy of a shared crisis. Well, thankfully, goodness knows we have enough shared crises available these days that we could choose to focus our collective energies towards. But I imagine this gives us at least two potential problems, as near as I can tell. The first, as you can imagine in a group of you use, deciding which of the hundreds of retractable, difficult, life-threatening problems we see should be the one we combine our efforts against. And that sounds nearly impossible to think about how we might do that. And secondly, in this moment in time, whether we're willing to admit it or not, many of us are feeling too exhausted by the very real societal upheaval that has been hoisted upon us by this ongoing pandemic to consider contributing much to the fight of the giant monsters of our day. What then shall we do? I would argue that you are already doing it. The solution to all that ails us, the sandbox that exists to help us work through whatever challenges we face, is right here in this intentional community. One of the titans of our faith tradition, the humanist James Luther Adams, said, "Love and justice can prevail only where they are supported by the fellowship, the friendliness, the concern of each for all and all for each, the sense of brotherly and sisterly responsibility found in a community of primary relations." James Luther Adams also said of the ideals needed to seed a just society, "If they do not grow in the individual, they will not grow in the family. And if they do not grow in the family, they will not grow in the community. And if they do not grow in the community, they will not grow in the nation or in the world." In this instance, James Luther Adams speaks to the same concept as was shared in an earlier talk I made here, highlighting Adrienne Maureen Brown's work with the concept of fractals, and the reminder that the society we see at the largest level is made up of nothing more but smaller and smaller versions of itself, all the way down to the smallest communal units and to each individual heart, which to me always provides a path of hope. Because when we recognize that the solution to the problems we see don't need to be tackled at the highest levels of the problem, but rather can be found at the local level, it just doesn't seem quite so daunting. So it begs the question, is there a single problem at the root of all of our current social ills? I think it would be easy to say that at least one issue is any false philosophy that places our individual concerns above our collective well-being. And unfortunately, that is pretty much the model of American capitalism. Extract and acquire as many resources as you can, compete to acquire more than your competitors, and do it as quickly and as cheaply as you can. When this is your theology, can there be any surprise that the result is a fractured world whose participants feel isolated and exhausted? The pandemic, which we are hopefully beginning to emerge from, provides a unique opportunity for a collective reevaluation of our priorities at the individual, communal, and ultimately societal levels. Because this system we are furiously trying to swim within, it might seem that the best path in the coming months just might be to take a collective rest. And for most of us, this is probably not a bad idea. This pandemic has created deep losses and has forced us to make so many hard decisions that we are left with a deep fatigue. Even simple tasks seem harder to achieve these days. But even if rest is right in the near-term solution, I would encourage us to seek rest and rejuvenation within the arms of this community. Because as we take the time we need to rest, we will continue to be aware of the many collective challenges we face that are still careening headlong towards a catastrophic cliff. One is aware of the realities of the world. Alone is the last thing we should be. I chose to come here because I believe you have built a foundation of the type of community that is the primary ingredient needed to heal the ills of our world. as I step into this role of minister, I've really come to believe that one of my primary roles is to help us all focus the closely aligned but ultimately disparate visions that each person comes into this space with, to provide feedback to both the individual and the larger system as you make your moves, to ensure that all of our finite energies are focused together as well as possible. Basically, to help the collective get all of our mirrors pointed in the same direction. As I've stepped into this work, it becomes easy to see the challenge points in a community. One set of folks believe they have seen a clear way forward, and they begin to demand the rest of the group goes in that direction. Another set of folks looks at that direction the group proposes and says, "I don't see how that direction serves me well." And then the large group in the middle just says, "I'm happy to go somewhere, just tell us where it should be." I used to think that this was a problem with the liberal church, everyone wanting to do their own thing. But as I entered into the system, I'm coming to see that this is far from the problem. It is rather both a strength of the system and a reality that needs to be considered if any meaningful change is to be possible. Those insistent voices that demand change and sometimes alienate aren't wrong. They simply inject the energy into a human system that will have a tendency towards stagnation if they don't exist. And the folks that resist the energetic calls for change provide a role as well. They serve to remind us that the way things are, the way things they have been, are that way for a reason, and that any change in the direction needs to be carefully considered. James Luther Adams said, "The voluntary association is a means for institutionalizing of gradual revolution." I look at our director of religious exploration, Alice Mant, as a perfect example of the success of a community like this. Raised entirely in UU settings, she has been imprinted with a passionate view of what might be possible at the heights of human cooperation and understanding. But she's also been launched into a world that doesn't always support that. And like many of our next generations, feels frustrated between the obvious disconnect. But it is precisely because she was given a set of tools by this faith community that she continues marching forward through whatever challenges arise to ensure the generation behind her is offered the same tools that she was provided for this task. I am re-inspired to do this work nearly every time I speak with her. And I am beyond eager to have our children gather back together to pick up this mantle once again. So I think this simply is the basis of our work, to continue together in community, to remain a viable entity that exists to bring folks together for reasons beyond our own petty wants, needs, and desires. As we try once again to emerge from this pandemic that has kept so many apart for so long, we will once again be challenged to do the work of nurturing this community. I will say that this community is poised to emerge from this pandemic as strong, if not stronger, than you were before. Sadly, I can't say this about all communities. There are many intentional communities that did not have the strength of bonds that exist here. And I've seen many folks drift away once the mechanism of weekly gathering was taken away. In the coming months, your board and I will be encouraging this community to revision your mission and vision. Not necessarily to change them, but to make sure we are all in agreement and aligned and clear regarding what they are calling us to do in this pivotal moment in history. When the board considered this at our last recent board retreat, there was general agreement that all of the current 342 words of your mission, vision, and bond of union are generally the right sentiments. But I wonder if anyone gathered here could recite the language of even one of those documents. Even if they are the right sentiments, they won't help to align our mirrors if they aren't easily accessible and clear to everyone. rather than do the heavy lift of recreating each of these, I've been wondering if perhaps there is instead a simple tagline that could be developed that would encompass all that this community exists for and strives to be. You know, maybe something like Prairie provides a safe space for individual and collective thriving of community through challenge and collaboration. I don't know what it should be. How would you bottom line this community's reason for being? I'd love to hear your thoughts during the discussion if you've already considered this. In the coming months, we'll be encouraging the wordsmithers in this community to wrestle with just this question. The clearer we can get about what we're doing and why, the easier it'll be to do our work, and the more attractive we will be to other seekers who are looking for a community to work within. I don't know what the right words are, but I do know that what you have here is the foundation of all that is needed to heal the ills of the world. I believe that our collective work is to increase the capacity of this community to hold all of our disparate individual beliefs in a container that continually reminds us that there are higher shared beliefs that we need to align around if we are to create a better world tomorrow than exists today. As Marilyn Sewell reminds us, the mission of the church is not to meet our needs. The mission of the church is to heal the world. Now, all this may well sound well and good, but I know that there are some gathered here and many around the world that believe we have gone too far down a dark path, and it is too late to apply any meaningful fixes powerful enough to save us from disaster. Why should I put my limited energies into this small community if the whole thing is going to collapse anyway? Why shouldn't I pick a bigger monster to slay? Or better yet, just wrap myself under a warm blanket and await the coming storms. Because no matter what life has in store next, those with strong communal bonds have always fared better than others. History shows us that when time gets hard, community is sometimes our only available source of strength. This faith tradition is a container of a set of ideals. And our ancestors, in many cases, gave their lives to ensure we carried these ideals forward. Part of the spoken and sometimes unspoken duty of a faith community is to be the keepers of these communal survival strategies that have been passed down by our ancestors. Our current list of sources remind us that all the wisdom and knowledge that is passed down through relationship potentially has valuable insights to share. And although we may trace many different lineages, if we believe that we are all one, then we have to say that we are also connected to all of our ancestors and the wisdoms that they have tried to pass down to us. Many of the most cherished beliefs we hold today were practiced underground as survival mechanisms, sometimes for hundreds of years through dark times of separation, by members of groups and individuals that struggled to survive the challenges of their day. And the most ancient wisdom that was passed down to support that collective survival is a reminder that is almost shared universally. E pluribus unum. We are all one. We are each part of an interdependent web where what happens to one happens to all. Let us commit together in the coming days and weeks and months ahead to reground ourselves into the collective work of this community. Because no matter what struggles appear in our path, we are most assuredly stronger together. E pluribus unum. This is the grounding of our theology. We are one.
Thank you so very much, Reverend Matt. We now have time for discussion. So please raise your hand virtually via the reactions button or on your camera. And after I call on you, please unmute yourself to speak. Barb Park, hand is up.
Good morning.
Morning.
I just read a fascinating article that kind of reinforces what you said, Matt. It was an article talking about why did Homo sapiens survive over Neanderthals or Denisovans or the other human groups that, you know, were around. At one point, we were not the only example of our Homo brethren. Yeah. And the conclusion, you know, they've been struggling this for a long time. So, well, we were smarter. Well, it turns out we weren't smarter. Well, we had better sense of symbolism. No, we didn't have a better sense of symbolism. The more they look, and these scientists came to the conclusion that it was our sense of community, our sense of socialization, of needing lots of other people, and that. Led groups to not be isolated, but so they have examples of inland groups having things from the sea because they traded, and those kinds of things don't show up in the Neanderthal or Denisovan cultures. And as the climate changed, there was more resiliency because there was the interconnectedness of community. So there you go.
Makes perfect sense. One of the things that stuck out to me, I read Twilight of American Democracy by Morris Berman. And I remember him saying that the very ideals that we have founded our current understanding and our current beliefs in, may have originated in you know, ancient Greece and with the thinkers there, and that all of those thoughts and all of those ideals of democracy were nearly wiped out through the Dark Ages through the just people lost the ability to communicate and even wrestle with these things, and it was religious communities. Monks sitting there copying these things that they had lost. They had completely lost the ability to interpret the language, but they just knew from what little they knew of what they were writing down that this stuff was important. And they devoted their lives to keeping to copying and to writing and to keeping these ideas that they didn't even know what they were, but they knew they were important ideas and they needed to be passed down. And that is what has always stuck out to me is the idea of collective communities are not only survival mechanisms for individuals, but they are the survival mechanisms for the ideals that a society founds itself upon. Raph, I see your hand, and I know you have a handful of of littles there. So,
you guys might see my back most of of the front.
That's okay.
So I used to be politically involved in France, where I came from, and the whole pandemic has like shattered a lot of my beliefs and the things I did, and I started to read a lot. Classical liberalism, libertarianism, left libertarianism, anarchy, and so on and so forth. And I ended up reading a bit about the Paris Commune of 1871. And it's fascinating. It didn't last that long, but it's one of the best, I think, examples of how like local level organization in somewhat chaos led to human progress. And one of the things that the commune did in 1871 is they started a free vaccine clinic against smallpox. People don't know that, but I think that if we had more communes, basically would probably have more people vaccinated than we do currently.
Thank you so much. Anyone else? Do you see another hand? I don't right now.
I see Al just raised his hand.
Yeah.
So as you, Matt, and the board and others try and review some of our processes, I would like you to pick up on what I've been trying to accomplish for several years, and that is our opening liturgy. It needs to be reworked dramatically. I think it's important for us to learn what others' pronouns are and to properly use those, but I'm sorry, it's turned into instructions in how to change our name on our label on Zoom. And the repeated words at the beginning of our program need to have meaning. It's in the classification of liturgy, and we need to really look carefully at what we have been repeating every Sunday for years that I've been trying to get changed unsuccessfully so that we have more meaning to the beginning of our programs.
Any other hands up right now? Mary Mullen?
Well, I'm thinking about the individual and the group. I guess what I wanted to say is that when a person joins a group, first, I feel they have to feel they're getting something from the group before they're asked to do this and that or provide money for the group or something like that. So that, and I think Prairie is pretty good about this, I hope we are, that we make people feel welcome. We state that we want them to feel welcome, and there's a lot of reaching out to new people and helping them understand that we want them to be part of the group. And the caring committee, for example, does this to new members as well as members who have been around a long time. And so this is where our caring comes out. And as the caring becomes really obvious to the individual, then the individual is willing to think and interested in thinking about how can I keep this group together because it's really helped me. So that's what I wanted to say. I don't know if it's really clear what I said, but I don't want to talk any more than that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Okay, Gary.
Oh, hi, I'm Gary. Hi. I'm a sort of an ongoing visitor. And I would just like to reassure you that in terms of your openness and friendliness and informing people and integrating people and all that, you are doing just fine. That's all I had to say.
Thank you very much, Gary. Any other comments right now? Oh, go ahead, Reverend Matt.
No, I was going to say that's good to hear. I see the work that is done to make that happen, and it's good to know that it's working from perspective of a person that showed up. That's good. I see Kathy and Randy. One of them have their hands up.
I just wanted to say with my feeling with particularly with the Madison area has had so much growth in the last 4 to 5 years. And you just look at all the apartment buildings everywhere and these large numbers of very young, you know, pretty much younger people who are moving here. So the assumption is most of them are probably coming without families and they're not originally living here. And I think Prairie has the opportunity to be a more home-like family gathering of people, and like Mary said, showing people that, new people that we care about them. And I think that there's plenty of people in the community that are seeking what we have here. And as Brother Matt said, the trick is going to be how to let people know who we are and how we exist, because it just seems like there's so many new people that are away from home, away from where they their families and all in this community. And I know that Prairie has served that for Randy and I, who have no family closer than, say, Colorado. In the 40 years we've been here, Prairie has been our family and our home. That's it.
Yeah, that's one thing that the participants of the faith tend to do a terrible job at is evangelizing about the life healing, saving possibility and potential that is here, right? And I don't think it has to be anything other than, hey, you know what? I am part of this place where I feel connected to something larger and I'm not out here all by myself. And if you're feeling that need, then come on along and let's see what we can do together. I mean, it's that simple. There's plenty of opportunity. I think you're going to be seeing a lot of things in the coming year now that we are hopefully being able to begin getting coming back together. Lots of opportunities to begin to say, where do we want to focus our efforts? How do we, what should we come back together to do? I think there's a lot of work to be done with supporting the RE program. I think there's a lot of really deep and intense discussions around what we should be doing collectively and not doing collectively, challenging our own perceptions of what's right and wrong. Those discussions, you know, this place is a container that those discussions can happen. And I'm looking forward. If you want to have any conversation about anything, if you think we should be talking about one thing or the other, send me a note. Let's get a group going. Let's get a group of people together that have energy to talk about a challenge and let's figure out what we can do together. Let's do that.
Thank you. Excellent. Any other questions at all right now?
So I don't see anything.
All right. Well, we will have our closing words now, and they are written by Louise Green, a contributor to the book A People So Bold, and that will be read by Reverend Matt Aspen.
Sorry, I'm accidentally muted you, Reverend Matt, so you have to unmute yourself.
All right. Louise Green writes, "Who is the prophet in these urgent times? You are the prophet, for there may be no other who will speak and act now. The prophet hears and responds to an insistent and urgent inner voice. The prophet speaks from an internal fountain, giving voice to another's silence. The prophet sees and expresses in uncommon ways, upsetting the status quo. The prophet sends a wake-up call in the present to shape the future. Let us each be that."
Thank you very much. We are now going to stop the recording. And I'm sorry, we have the closing music. It is Ain't No Toll in Canaan by Beth DeSombra, and it's performed by Rachel Long, Lynn Curry, and Dan Proud.
I try to walk the straight and narrow on a road both crooked and wide, hoping to make it to the river Jordan so I can cross over to the other side. But the way was blocked by the righteous few who tried to tell me what to do, demanding fees to let me through. But there ain't no toll in Canaan. There ain't no map, ain't no. Into battle, trumpets sounding, banners unfurled, claiming the mantle of a pious nation, bringing the gospel to the heathen world. I stood to protest, mourn and speak. They said my choices made me weak. I tried to turn the other cheek, cause there ain't no toll in Canaan. There ain't no map, ain't no plan. We make the way. Near and far the pilgrims gather, called by revelation and grace. Everyone traveled on a different journey, seeking redemption in a
Thank you so much. That was very beautiful music. We're now going to stop the recording, and then we will move into our joys and concerns and also welcoming visitors.